What's up, everybody? Welcome back to a brand new episode of Comeback Season, the podcast presented by Barstool Sports. This week, it's just me and Johnny Manziel kicking back and talking football. EB is traveling or ducking us, one or the other. We keep roasting him on the podcast, so he is not with us this week, but it is the first official day of the CFL offseason, so we look at all the biggest storylines in college football, the biggest headlines from last week, and of course, picking games that are coming up as well. We talk Dez Bryant and the big move to the New Orleans Saints. We talk about video games, and I feel extremely old. EB did call me middle-aged last week, so maybe that's actually coming to fruition, and much, much more. As always, this podcast is presented by Velveeta Shells and Cheese. Now, the contest is over for that SEC Championship trip all-inclusive. Hopefully, one of our listeners did win that, but if not, you still should check out Velveeta Shells and Cheese, because being a football fan is extremely draining. Nobody has time to cook elaborate meals, and you don't have to with Velveeta. It's quick and easy to prepare. You just boil the water, you cook the shells, and you stir in the delicious cheese sauce. Johnny and I are huge fans of not only the mac and cheese, but also the queso. That's a tradition down in the South for college football. If you don't know the queso, you are not living your life correctly. So go get you some Velveeta, cook those shells and cheese, and also make the queso as well. It is a game day ritual, no matter if you're sitting on your couch, if you're tailgating, if you're hungover, if you're happy, no matter what mood you're in, Velveeta shells and cheese is delicious as always. So make sure you go check out Velveeta shells and cheese and get you some of that queso. You won't regret it.
They wish and I wish and I wish and I wish and they wish and on me. Yeah.
All right, we're back here with a new episode of Comeback Season. It's just me and Johnny today. EB decided to big time us. Johnny, I don't really know how he thinks he can get off doing that, but here we are.
Well, as it should be, the two brightest people of the podcast obviously come through week in and week out. And, you know, EB decided to take a week off, and that's okay. We'll give him a breather. You know, he gets roasted on here weekly. You know, I'm sure he's not over anxious to really come speak to me every week.
I guess that is true, because not only do you roast him, and that's been going on since we started this thing, like recently, like we've kind of ganged up on him because, like you said, we're the brightest minds. We're usually 100% right, but he gets roasted by the two of us. So maybe he's realizing like he just needs a week off to kind of regroup so he can stop just taking L's every single week to us.
Yeah, he needs to find some more locks of the week or something.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that's what he's doing. He's on some cross-country flight trying to pay people's mortgages. I know that you finished your CFL season. You're back in LA, and it's been a whirlwind for you. So before we talk all the college football stuff, which we have a ton to talk about, just tell me, I mean, how has it been? I mean, it was a crazy year for you, but you got back on the field and you were playing, and I know you had a lot of fun.
It's a fun league. That's the one thing about the CFL. Like, it is a up-tempo, spread, like, good passing concept league, and it was definitely a fun year. I enjoyed getting to see all the different parts of Canada. I enjoyed being back in the locker room and being back in the mix of football. I mean, I haven't been doing that for a couple of years, so to be back around the guys and be back to playing and just getting into the mix of things is as good as it gets for me. And then just knowing next year that I have a place to go back to, obviously anxious for that to start already.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing with this whole the comeback season that you've been talking about for a long time, getting back on the field. But how is it already knowing you're going back? You have another year, and you want to keep improving. You want to keep getting better and kind of proving the chance that you want to get back to the NFL. But so now, between the end of this season and next season, what does that look like for you? I mean, you're not in Canada, obviously. You're in LA. So what do you do between now and then, knowing that you do have another season coming up?
Yeah, I don't think the comeback season mindset that I had before you know, this first season has changed at all for me. You know, I still have a lot of things that I want to accomplish, and I know it's not the easiest road back, but I've just got really narrow-minded into everything and focusing on, you know, kind of the here and the now and what I can do to try and, you know, get ready for next year. And, I mean, that looks exactly like it probably did last year for me a little bit. You know, I want to change some things about my, you know, just about some technique and some things like that, so I feel like I can go back next year and be ready to go, because I feel like I've got a lot of the mental preparation out of the way and can really just get back to playing ball next year, which is what I felt like I was doing this year. So step in the right direction for sure, but you know, it's a long process, and I'm keeping a good mindset about it.
So you told me before you played a lot of video games, and I know that during the offseason you're going to have even more time to play video games. And I've said, like, I feel old. I'm not a big video game person. Of course, here at Barstool, we've got game time and all that stuff. Everybody's losing their minds every single day about video games. But hours a day, do you think you're going to be playing video games during the off season when you're not working out? Because I feel like that's just going to have to like take over now at this point if you're not at practice.
I'll probably get like a good two to three hours.
Well, that's not so bad. That's not bad.
But it could be more, especially in these first couple weeks. Really after the season, kind of just getting a chance to unwind and then, you know, give a little bit of time off. So I'll probably be on, you know, anywhere from like two to four to five hours a day.
How's the wife feel about that?
Not very happy about it whatsoever. I'm fighting the Wi-Fi connection right now. I need the best connection I can get. I've had the Canadian connection for the last couple months, and it's been difficult at times. So, you know, I've cranked the Fortnite up, playing some Call of Duty and Red Dead Redemption. So, I got to get my game on during the off season for at least the first couple weeks.
Are you any good at Fortnite?
I'll beat Smitty's ass.
I mean, he stinks, though. I don't know how much is like that's not a great accomplishment. He thinks he's really good, but he also knows he stinks, which I think is just a kind of a backwards-ass ego, because he walks around, he's like, I'm the game time guy, but he never wins at Fortnite. So it's, like, not hard to beat him, right?
I mean, once you learn how to build, Fortnite's all about the builds. For a long time, I was just getting my ass kicked on a daily because I didn't know how to build anything, and then I feel like I've got to a point now where I can hang a little bit. So definitely steady improvement over the last 6 months.
I felt like you were just speaking French to me, like the whole building thing. I have no idea. Like, I've seen Fortnite maybe over people's shoulders. Like, my video game expertise, do you remember the Twisted Edge video game? You might be too young for that. It was like a snowboarding game. Did you ever play that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so that's like that and like Super Smash Brothers. That's as far back as my game time expertise goes. And Fortnite, I feel like I have no idea what's going on.
When I first heard about people playing Fortnite and saw it, I was like, you know what? I'm never going to play this game. It looks like nothing I would ever play. 8 months later, it's probably been one of my favorite games I've ever played. I still play it more than Call of Duty to this day.
Well, now you're going to have
a... Which is rare for me, Casey, which is rare. I'm a big Call of Duty guy.
And I've never played Call of Duty. I honestly feel like my mother right now, like, oh, I don't understand video games. So maybe next time that you're in New York, and I know you'll be here for the Heisman stuff later in December, and you're going to have to come in, you're going to have to play Smitty at game time, but you're also going to have to teach me how to play these games so I don't feel so fucking old. Is that okay?
We'll see what I can do. You need to hop on the game time, though. Just go peek. Just go watch it. Go watch a little bit.
I just feel like it's one of those situations where if I don't try to play or don't get on the stream that I can't get roasted. The second that I get on there, it's like, oh, this girl knows absolutely nothing about gaming and I just look dumb. But that's just me being scared. I'm playing scared. I should, no excuses, play like a champion and just jump right in.
Thank you.
Gotta have that wedding crush.
Yourself. I didn't even have to.
Yeah, right? I mean, I need the fact that I even need a hype up moment talking about video games is sad, but we'll definitely have you and Smitty play. And that would be something, you're a Barstool guy, you know that Smitty and Nate have like their forever long feud. Like, that could be a really fun thing of you just kind of being the referee in that and then beating Smitty's ass in video games.
I might have to team up though. Have to, you know, get Smitty a couple more wins. He's lacking.
Yeah, that, what a team player that would be. So you've got the video games. You're back in LA. You guys just get to hang out for a few months before you go back to Canada. But
I'm back on my golf wave. Casey.
How long has it been since you've really gotten to play?
Oh, it's at least I didn't play one time this entire season.
Really?
But before that, I was probably playing three times a week before I went up to Canada. So I'm excited to get back into the mix.
Well, EB's not on the podcast to defend himself right now, but can you beat EB in golf?
EB is awful.
Is he really?
EB's just not very athletic outside of basketball.
Well, EB's probably not very athletic because he doesn't eat breakfast. And we all know that that is the most important meal of the day. And while there's some scientific proof to back that up, have you heard about the most important deal of the day? Move over breakfast, because right now you can get 2 bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches for $5 all day long at Dunkin'. And if we can all agree on one thing on this podcast, which is hard to do sometimes, it's that 2 bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches is always better than 1, especially if it only costs you $5. And we can probably agree on a few more things. Maybe, maybe not, but I won't get into that. America runs on Dunkin'. Barstool runs on Dunkin'. Comeback season runs on Dunkin'. Participation may vary. It's a limited time offer, but don't be like EB. Make sure you eat breakfast. Go get yourself some delicious Dunkin'.
Like, outside of actually shooting a jump shot, you've got no game.
That's so, I mean, I feel like you guys have talked about playing each other in basketball and him talking shit to you, but I didn't realize that was the only sport that he was athletic in was basketball, which, by the way, is a weird one, because, like, basketball, you have to be super athletic, I feel like, to be any good at it.
He's just a spot shooter. He's definitely got a good jumper. I was surprised.
So he can like win at knockout, but a one-on-one game, you'd probably beat him, right?
Yeah, his lateral movement, quickness, not really his strong suit.
Poor EB. He's just not here to defend himself. So you've got games. You've got Fortnite. You're going to keep getting better at that. You're playing golf. You're back in L.A. with your wife. You're getting some much-needed rest. But also college football, which is the whole thing with this podcast, is like in full swing, week 11. And last week there was a lot of great games like on paper. Like the headline games were huge, big marquee games. But it was kind of an anticlimactic result. Like there was nothing last week that I looked at and was like, oh my God, I didn't expect that, outside of the fact that Nebraska almost beat Ohio State.
Yeah, outside of that, I was upset with Utah. Utah makes it, you know, 1-1 lock of the week for me, so I'm not overly excited about that when your QB goes down. But outside of that, I think West Virginia coming back at the end of that game is makes the Big 12 even more interesting coming down later into the season with West Virginia and Oklahoma playing. Kind of knocks Texas out of the mix a little bit, keeps West Virginia high, and gives the Big 12 at least a couple options you think maybe sneak in.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because this was something that I've been talking shit about all week. And, of course, it's easy for me as an Aggie, probably for you as an Aggie, to do. But the fact that Tom Herman and these players right now are actually mad at the horns down stuff that happened, you know, Dana Holgorsen doing it, other players doing it, they're legitimately upset that people are throwing the horns down. And I think that is the softest move of all time.
I think it is insane that that is a penalty. If anybody walked into A&M and did thumbs down or anything like that, that would be no flag.
None.
The fact that putting the horns down is a 15-yard penalty, and any other thing that you would do with the school's hand sign, anything like that, would not even be reprimanded the same way whatsoever.
It's ridiculous. And it's also, if you can do horns up when you're celebrating and not get penalized, which you shouldn't, then the fact that somebody does horns down shouldn't be as well. And that's like that. First of all, that game was super exciting, probably by far the best game of the week. And then for Dana Holgorsen to go for two and say, like, let's just go win the game, knowing fully well that they could convert that 2-point conversion. The fact that Tom Herman was so upset about that, and then the week before he was so upset about Mike Gundy, I'm starting to just think he's kind of a little bitch, to be honest.
A lot of pressure at that Texas job. They get to a point where they're ninth in the country and everybody's saying Texas is back, and you look up 2 weeks later and they're 6-3 and it doesn't look like they're back. So there's a lot of pressure in that position, especially with them wanting to be back to where they were at one point. And you obviously look and see that their program is getting better, but you know, this year, obviously, you know, it's got to be a little bit frustrating.
What do you think about the West Virginia going for two at that moment, especially because there was two timeouts? So it's like basically they burned two formations before they even got to run the play with Will Grier.
Yeah, I think it's a classic Holgorsen move. And I think Coach Babb there is the OC and QB coach as well. I think those guys are risk takers. And to go into that situation, I think you go for it. And he obviously said, fuck it, let's ride.
I loved it. It was great. And even though, like, when they called that second timeout when Texas did and they had already converted it, I was like, there's no chance he's going to go back now, because they had the clip of him saying, of Dana saying, like, oh, we're going to go win the game, let's go win the game. That's why we talk a lot of shit about the Big 12 sometimes, but those types of games and those moments with the high scoring and just going for things like that, it does make the Big 12 a lot of fun to watch, especially when you've got teams now in the conversation like West Virginia and Oklahoma, like you said, that could sneak up into the playoffs, which is crazy because in the beginning of the year we said there's no way if it's not Oklahoma.
Yeah, of course. Who doesn't like to see the high profile offense and scoring a lot of points and risking it every time you're in a big situation going for it on fourth down? I think the Tech Oklahoma game was another game that was fun to watch and a good game all the way to the end, pretty much. So, you know, we got an Oklahoma West Virginia showdown in the Big 12, and is a Big 12 team going to sneak into the Final Four?
It's definitely on the table still, and after OU lost earlier in the season, that was kind of a question of if anybody could do it. And I, like I said, the defenses in the Big 12, they're awful. They're usually not very good. But West Virginia has a decent defense. I actually owed Dave Portnoy an apology about that OU Texas Tech game because I thought OU was going to cover. I think it was like 14.5, and I obviously was wrong on that. But the fact is now that West Virginia and Oklahoma are playing, I'm still a big Kyler Murray fan. Oklahoma playing Oklahoma State this weekend, and we'll go back into the SEC in a second. But what do you think about that game? I think OU is favored by like 18 points. It's obviously a huge rivalry game. Is this something you look at and say, okay, this could be a trap for OU because Oklahoma State's not playing well?
I mean, usually this game stays pretty close for the most part, but I still think you look at Oklahoma, number 6 team in the country, they have to still keep their foot on the gas these next 2 weeks over teams like Oklahoma State and Kansas to make sure their resume is impressive enough to hop back to where they need to be. You look and you would say that Georgia, who's ahead of them, would maybe lose to Alabama, or one of those teams wouldn't be in the playoff, but Oklahoma still needs to put on a show. I think Kyler still needs to put on a show. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's necessarily out completely of the Heisman contention whatsoever.
That's what's interesting about the Big 12 when you talk about the fact that OU and West Virginia right now, as everything stands, could potentially be playing each other two times in like 8 or 9 days, whatever the difference is between those two games. You look at the Big 12 and talk about the playoffs, that's either a huge disadvantage or a really big advantage that they have that. And this year, again, as long as these two teams don't lose, which I don't expect them to, I don't think OU is going to struggle with Oklahoma State at all. Like, that alone is interesting enough because they're going to get to play each other twice and no other conference gets to do that back to back like that normally.
No, and that's obviously a little bit odd. I almost think it leaves them at a little bit of a disadvantage. You know, you want to have those teams not knocking each other down before you go into the game that means the most for your conference. But, you know, I think obviously if any team out of that can come and win twice, you'd expect them to be able to be in.
Yeah, it's cannibalism. That's the whole thing with the Big 12. But if it works out for either Oklahoma or West Virginia, you could see them sneak into those top four. Before we move on from that, do you think that Oklahoma covers this 18-point spread?
I do. I like Oklahoma. I think they're going to roll. I'm staying on the Kyler train. They've been a little bit off. They've been in some tight games, you know. But I still think, look back a couple weeks ago, they beat Kansas State by 36 points, 37 points. I still think they have those games in them and that type of offensive performance. So I think they'll cover it.
I think so too. I really
give me a blowout.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I also, this is one of those things that I need to get over because Baylor has had some good seasons. I mean, obviously back when I was in school, they had some good seasons. But anytime a team loses to Baylor, I just automatically assume that they stink. The fact that OSU lost to Baylor last week, it's like, whatever, give me OU by a million, because anybody that loses to a team in Waco, I just feel like they're just no good ever.
I mean, in the here and now, that's probably the case. I don't think we would have said that in 2011 or 12 or 13 or 14 for sure.
No, it's just one of those things. It's like a block in my mind, which is, goes back to A&M being in the Big 12 and the few times I had to go to Waco, which, I mean, I have some friends that live in Waco and that's great. Waco stinks. Like, I could just never go back there and be completely happy.
Yeah, I definitely could live without going back to Waco, Texas.
Yeah, Waco's not great. So I'm going to go with OU to cover 18 as well. So we talked about the Big 12 last weekend. The marquee game of the week was Alabama-LSU. Alabama completely destroying them. And I know that we talked about that Alabama is probably, I mean, the best team in the country. But the best part about that game was Coach O, right? From the very beginning, he was like a WWE guy. And if you weren't looking at an Alabama and a Nick Saban team like they have, you'd probably say, like, Bama's going to destroy him just because of how convincing Coach O is.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously gives the team a lot of confidence, but still at the end of the day, LSU's weakness showed, and that was their offense. And we said this at the beginning of the year when we were on this podcast, how far could Joe Burrows and him and that team really carry that team on offense?
Mm-hmm.
And with a team like Alabama on defense that suffocates you and doesn't let you get anything started, that weakness was obviously, you know, exploited. I still think LSU is a really good team and probably ends up in a BCS bowl, but, you know, Alabama is a different beast.
Completely different, but at the same time, I mean, LSU has proven that they're in that discussion. The whole SEC bias thing, I don't know how – did you see the College Game Day stuff whenever the politician from Baton Rouge came on and said that there's an SEC bias? Did you see any of that?
I did.
So what did you think about ESPN apologizing for that? What did you think about the original statement and then the apology?
I didn't think much of it, honestly.
Really?
I think ESPN, obviously, in their political, you know, it's been there sometimes. It hasn't been there in others. It's been a little bit of a weird deal, and I didn't really pay much attention to it whatsoever.
I just feel like every time people say there's an SEC bias at ESPN, as much as I do not get along with ESPN, I always defend it. I'm like, no, the SEC is the best conference year in and year out. Of course, you can make the argument other places. I even tried to argue about the Big Ten, which is not a complete, you know, bullshit pick at this point earlier in the season. But then for them to come out and apologize, it's like I can't even defend the fact that they probably have an SEC bias because they're apologizing to the commissioner on live national television for something they shouldn't have apologized for. So now it's like the SEC bias thing. Like, I can't even defend it.
I mean, it is the best conference. It is a fact. Preferential treatment, I guess.
That is a fact. And Velveeta Shells and Cheese, they sponsor that. I mean, look at that. Me working in a sponsor. They love the SEC, so we love the SEC. Coach O and closed captioning. That was probably the best thing that came out of that game, because once the game got out of control, it was like, okay, this is boring. Tua doing Tua things. But the closed captioning with Ed Orgeron after that game is probably one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it's as good as it gets. The fact that this – how true LSU he is with his accent and the way he talks, and the fact that somebody in the front row, some reporter is really sitting there as well, and like, I can't understand a single word that Coach O says, and I'm all for it, because all that matters is the guy's on his team, and he's a football guy to the core.
He is the definition of the football guy. Pardon My Take was down there, and I mean, they were just losing their minds because they love him. They had never been to Baton Rouge at night, so they absolutely love it. Has there ever been a coach that fits that team or their team better than Coach O at this point? Because I can't think of it. He is to a T LSU. I've never seen anything like it.
No, it doesn't get any better.
It does not. Like, he's just great. I hope he just never loses that job, just because he's so funny and I love watching it. I feel like LSU is going to be okay, but the big game of the week for the SEC this week is Georgia and Auburn. And I know you and I were texting about it. That Auburn A&M game was garbage last weekend. I am still so angry at how that game ended up coming out at the end of it.
Just crazy. I mean, I'm obviously, you know, extremely upset that entire rest of that day after seeing how that game ended and not being able to put any points on the board that late and just stalling on offense. But you see the flashes of what A&M could be and then what they aren't. So I don't think Auburn did anything overly convince me that a top 5-6 team like Georgia won't take care of business. Auburn still has flaws. I think this game is all Georgia. I'm still going to go again and take the favorite.
Yeah, and Georgia right now is favored 13.5, and I'd agree, because Georgia convinced me thoroughly that they are by far the best team in the East against Kentucky. Not that I thought Kentucky had a chance, but the A&M-Auburn game, you're right. Auburn didn't do anything to prove they were a better team. A&M gave it away, and I feel like it's almost my fault. I know there's not, like, football jinxes like there are in baseball. You played baseball. You know the whole superstition thing. I said in the fourth quarter when A&M was still up by 10, and I was watching it with some of my friends in Boston, and they were like, oh, A&M's going to win this. Fine, let's turn on another game. I was like, actually, there's no way A&M wins this football game. And I don't necessarily know if I believed it at that point, but it just felt like my battered Aggie syndrome was coming out. And it's almost like I willed it into existence, and I feel kind of badly about that.
That's a bad way to think about it.
It's like, are superstitions in football like they are in baseball? Can you not say things out loud and without them happening?
I just don't think it would change. No.
Well, I feel badly about that. But at the same time, Auburn is probably going to get crushed. I think Georgia, you know, obviously going to Atlanta, Georgia's the better team. Jake Fromm looked a little bit beat up, but I like what we're seeing from them. So I'm going to take Georgia as well. Pat, what did EB take on this game, out of curiosity?
Let's see.
Georgia.
He took Georgia?
Yep. EB took Georgia. He fired back those picks in like 0.2 seconds. So I don't know how much thought he put into them.
Probably not very
probably
much.
Probably not many.
Probably. What did he take Georgia. In OU Oklahoma State?
Hold on, let me pull these.
He took Oklahoma, Georgia, and last pick, he's going to take Clemson.
So I think we're probably – well, let's just go right in that game, because that – Boston College, the fact that College Game Day is headed to Boston College is crazy to me, Clemson being the number two team in the country and Boston College being 17th. And the fact that, like, you look at the ACC, we've talked about it being just a cupcake walk for Clemson, that Boston College could be that roadblock is – crazy, because nobody up there gives a shit at all about this game.
No, obviously, a team like Boston College, you don't expect to be ranked where they are and playing the way that they are, but obviously you give a lot of credit to them for getting to where they are, even in this ranking right now. But I just feel like Clemson up front running the ball the last – I think they had 400 yards rushing last week against a Louisville team. Obviously, Boston College is better than a Louisville team, but I just see – Clemson being able to run the ball and dominate on both sides of the ball, I think they cover, and I'm going to take the favorite again.
And that's 17 points. It's a huge spread, but I agree with you. Trevor Lawrence came out this week, and it's funny because, you know, he's a kid. He's a true freshman. I don't know. I mean, got to be 18, 19 years old. And they ask him the furthest north he's ever been. And he said he's never been north of Virginia. It's supposed to be like 30 degrees on Saturday night in Boston. And he's never started a night game in a situation like this where there's a lot on the line. As somebody who played at a very young age and played in a lot of these games, how much do you think that factors in? Does the cold matter as much as people make it out to be? Does the night matter as much? Or is that just something that the media likes to spin into it?
No, I think it depends on if you've played in it before. I've obviously been a lot more accustomed to it now, having been in Cleveland and having played in Canada. But, you know, I remember games going to Ole Miss even earlier in the year on a road night game that ended up being a shootout both times we went there. Same kind of situation. We played a Missouri game my second year later in the year that was colder and definitely a little going into it, a little banged up. And I felt like it had an effect. But obviously being healthy, being able to rely on the run game they have, and I don't think on the road anything's gonna slow this Clemson team down.
So we talked about this earlier this week because I like what Trevor Lawrence has done, and obviously I thought Kelly Bryant was a good quarterback, and he's the reason they beat A&M earlier in the season. But if you had to pick a better offense right now, would you take Alabama or would you take Clemson?
I would take Alabama.
I mean,
I think the way Tua is playing it, he threw his first interception out of 26, 25 touchdowns.
It's insane.
That's an insane ratio for a senior, for anybody. You can go back and look at the best quarterback stats over the last 10 years, and you're not going to find somebody with a 26-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Efficiency is through the roof, and they haven't even come close to losing the game this year.
And that he hadn't played in the fourth quarter this year until this last game. And he
29 points is the lowest that they've scored all year against a team that was ranked third in the country and has a very good defense.
It's insane. And then he scored, you know, with his feet, like that run that he had. Of course, it was kind of alarming if you're an Alabama fan. He's kind of tugging at his knee and limping off the field a little bit. But the fact that he's able to play the way he is with the defense Alabama has, I still am standing by this. And I've said this every single week, and I'm going to continue to say this is the best team I think Nick Saban has ever had.
Yeah, and we'll see. We'll see how they finish the stretch. Obviously, so far, so good. And I think it doesn't matter. Any team, any of the best teams in college football in the past, if you don't stay on the course and stay what you're doing and stay focused every week, anybody can be beat.
And obviously, being in November, it's big for the Heisman talk. And Tua has been one of the – it's kind of like Lamar Jackson when he won. It was like you knew from the beginning there was going to be a lot of those big numbers put up and all of that. Like, Tua has been the favorite as somebody who, obviously, being a Heisman Trophy winner in the past, has a Heisman Trophy vote. You mentioned Kyler Murray earlier. I mean, how far is this gap between Tua and everybody else at this point in your mind?
I think you look at it and see that – Alabama obviously has a slip up. If Alabama goes through, wins the SEC, Tua has 40 touchdowns, 35 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions, I don't think it's even remotely close. He's going to throw for close to 3,500, 4,000 yards, 35 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions. Like, that,
it's crazy.
That doesn't even come close to what anybody else is doing. And I think you have to have a slip up, or he has to miss a game, which obviously I don't see Alabama slipping up. So unless they lose, I think the rest of the people are just fighting for second, to be honest.
When do you have to put in your vote? That's like me being ignorant. Do you do that, I assume, after the season's over, but like, can you do it like up almost until the Heisman Trophy ceremony day?
It's probably maybe like a week before or something. I don't remember exactly what it is. We usually get an email every year towards December and get a chance to do it and vote on first, second, and third. So it's been fun to be able to do it.
I bet. I mean, and do you reveal who you vote for every year? I know some people do and some people don't.
Sometimes. I think the past 4 years that I've voted for the person who has won, so I haven't had anybody that I voted for that I thought was different than who ended up actually winning. I think with Lamar and Marcus, Jameis and Derrick Henry and the rest of the guys, and Baker as well, so I think I voted for everybody that ended up winning.
Well, now we have the podcast, so you have to say who you vote for. I mean, that's the whole point of this.
Oh, this
right?
Year, though, this year for sure.
Well, like,
right,
unveil
now,
it.
If I had to vote and close it in, I would vote Tua, Kyler, and then probably Will Greer.
Yeah, Will Greer's a good pick, too. And I feel like you're right. The gap is so big between Tua and everybody else, but then you look at how good those two guys have been. And as somebody who gets to come up to the ceremony, you're coming to New York, you've obviously gotten to do that a few times. What's the best – this is, like, totally out of left field, but I've just been thinking about this. Like, what's the best thing about being a Heisman Trophy winner during that, like, ceremony? I mean, what's your favorite part about all of this because you won and you get to do this for the rest of your life?
Yeah, I think it's the guys. I think all the past winners being there and getting a chance to go every single year. You know, the same guys show up. It's a great group of people and football legends of all over. I think just their personalities and the way they are and been coming back for so long that everybody knows each other so well that it's a pretty cool experience. So I think just getting a chance to be in New York around, you know, obviously around Christmas with a great college football tradition with a bunch of guys like that is definitely by far the best part.
Who is the funniest Heisman Trophy winner that you've been around? Other than yourself, of course. You can't vote for yourself. Who do you think you have, like, the most laughs with?
Oh, man. Maybe, like, Charles Rogers. Like, yeah. some of the old heads are as funny as they get.
Do they talk shit about, like, the difference in when they played versus when you guys played? Because I know that's probably more prevalent in basketball, you see, like the old guys in the NBA versus the new guys. Like, oh, they could never stand up in our generation. How much does that happen with the Heisman Trophy winners?
I just remember whenever we were shooting the Heisman House commercials and stuff, you know, obviously they're always messing with each other 24/7. So, you know, whenever we do those commercials for the whole day, it's interesting to see the guys kind of go back and forth.
I love those commercials. Like, it's like those, and as much, like I said, as much as I don't like ESPN, though, this is SportsCenter commercials. Those are the best. So whenever you're up here for the Heisman Trophy ceremony, obviously we'll have to have you come in and beat Smitty's ass at game time and then also give all the Heisman stuff, because I think it's really interesting. No matter what happens to anybody in their career post-college, you guys will always have that and have that fraternity and hopefully keep churning out those Heisman Trophy commercials. Like, the Heisman House commercials are probably the best thing I've seen on TV ever.
They are hilarious. They're a lot of fun to do. And they do them every single year. So they always keep it fresh, get some of the new guys on, rotate guys in and out. So it's I'm definitely honored and happy to be a part of it every year.
So do you have a lock of the week this week? EB's not here to give his. He lost again last week. That's probably why he's not on the podcast, actually, because he did not pay people's mortgages. But you had the tough thing with Utah, but the quarterback got hurt. So are you going to try again?
Am I going to try again? Well, I'll go on record as saying the two games that I definitely liked over the week, both ended up covering. I should have made those my lock. Nevertheless, I haven't even peeped it this week. I peeped our picks, looked into them a little bit. I haven't even looked. Who do our Aggies have this week?
Ole Miss, and it's an 11 a.m. kickoff, I believe.
Go Aggs.
I know. I don't even know what the spread is on that. I'm just – the Ole Miss is not good this year either, but the fact that A&M lost to Mississippi State and Auburn, it's just like, all right, fellas, what are we doing? That's actually, like, the whole narrative of A&M just falling off of a cliff in October and November, and it's obviously easy to do and say that every year when it actually happens. I just don't understand how it's happening again with somebody like Jimbo Fisher, because it seemed like that team was wildly different underneath him earlier in the year.
I still think they have a relatively young team, though. Obviously, relatively young quarterback, and you look around and see that other teams are still excelling with young guys in that situation. But to change the culture and get in there and run the system and the offense, it takes sometimes longer than 1 year. And I think Jimbo is obviously there for the long haul, and he's going to get a chance to really install a system and have have guys who have been in that for years on the field for him. And that's obviously what you want to get to. But I think they just need more time to keep doing what Jimbo wants, and he'll get it to where he needs to be. It's not always a quick fix, especially with coming in and changing things the way they were under someone, especially offensively.
Yeah, and of course, every single year you're in the same division as Alabama. So even though they're paying him $75 million to coach and change the culture, you're not beating Nick Saban anytime soon. So it's kind of like a lose-lose in that situation. They're paying you $75 million to win national championships, but it's hard to even get out of your division at this point.
Yeah, that's the hard thing about the SEC. You know, obviously, either side, you know, you get a deal next year where I think A&M has to play Clemson, Bama, and Georgia with the East team. So you have to win all three of those to get into a national championship. So, you know, obviously, the way the schedule is, the way A&M's been scheduling people, they want to play good teams, and you better get ready to go, because that schedule is not changing anytime soon.
No, it's not, and that's why we have the SEC bias that we do, because the SEC is the hardest conference to play in, right? That's the whole point of this.
I mean, I think the facts show that.
I do, too.
What do I know?
Well, and also, nobody can prove us differently, because it's our podcast, so nobody can come on and prove us any differently, especially if EB's not here. Yeah, right? That's the whole, like, and EB's not here to defend himself, so actually we should just kind of start throwing him under the bus even more until he can defend himself.
Maybe he'll be back next week.
Yeah, we'll see. So college football stuff, I mean, obviously getting close to conference championships, a couple weeks left before that. Before we get into the biggest storyline in the NFL this week, we're going to talk about Away Luggage. By now, you probably know I am a huge fan of this first-class luggage that doesn't cost you very much. On Monday's episode, I talked about how I am a physical walking billboard for Away right now because I am obsessed with it. It's completely changed the game, and you should let it change your game when you're traveling. If you want money off the suitcase, $20 off, go to awaytravel.com/comeback and use our promo code comeback during checkout. That's $20 off. But not only that, you get completely free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48 states, and you get a 100-day trial. And that's the key. You can live with this badass luggage. You can vibe with it. You can travel with it. You can even Instagram if you want, make everybody jealous of you. And if at any point you decide it's not for you, you can return it for a full refund, no questions asked. Again, go to awaytravel.com/comeback and use our promo code comeback for all of those great offers. If you don't know Away, you're missing out. You can walk in a train station, an airport, charge your phone that has a USB cord coming right out of the luggage. You have a dirty laundry bag. It's TSA approved. It's a 360-degree spinner. Basically, it's everything you could possibly want in a first-class luggage at not a first-class price. So again, go to awaytravel.com/comeback. They've got amazing colors, and you can send it back if you don't like it. But I promise you, you will love it just like I do. Again, awaytravel.com/comeback. All right, so let's talk Dez Bryant. Dez, to me, is one of the best social media follows, and he has been since he didn't get re-signed in Dallas in April because he just trolls everybody. Big news for him that he's signing with the New Orleans Saints, which it actually shocks me that it took this long for somebody to even pick him up because I think he's only 30 years old. He's not, you know, the guy he was in like 2013-14, but this is a big pickup for the Saints, who, as good as they are offensively right now, they don't really have depth at vet or for wide receivers because they're just kind of injured there. So what did you think about this?
I think it's a great pickup for the Saints. I think they get a guy who's been doing nothing but working out. He's obviously as fresh as it gets coming into midseason. They're sitting there at 7-1 and just beat the only undefeated team in the league. I think you look at the Saints as a team that is in perfect contention to make a run to the playoffs and get back to the Super Bowl. And I think signing Dez only helps them solidify that case even more. I think it's a great signing. I think it's a great thing for Drew Brees and a great thing for Dez. I'm surprised it took this long too, but nevertheless, it couldn't have gone to a better team for him.
And he said that earlier in the year, even in the offseason, that he wanted to go play for a Super Bowl contending team. At the time, we were talking about the Patriots, but you know, Drew Brees and those guys are there. You've got Michael Thomas, so he doesn't have to come in and be, you know, the number one wide receiver. But the most interesting thing to me about all of this, and I mentioned him trolling because, again, on social media, it's been phenomenal. Even though he says, like, oh, I have no ill will towards the Cowboys, as garbage as the Cowboys look right now, which they're just horrendously bad to watch, like, you know, there's a little bit of anger towards the fact that they didn't re-sign him. He kind of got thrown under the bus a little bit. They kind of used him as a scapegoat during the offseason. The fact that the Saints have to go to Dallas and play the Cowboys in a few weeks, as somebody who's obviously played a lot of competitive football, how much fire do you think Dez Bryant is going to have specifically for that game?
I mean, I think that's just an obvious question. The fact he's going to be out of his mind. So I think it's going to be a chance for him to go in there with a superior team and hopefully get a – he's going to want a chance to beat up on his old team for sure.
It's appointment television. I mean, I obviously am going to hate watch the Cowboys because they're just so hard to watch no matter what. But now I'm going to get my popcorn ready because I asked this today and I tweeted about it and I've been talking about it in the office. Do you think that he's going to pull a T.O.? I know it's different circumstances, but if he scores or does something crazy, pull a T.O. and go disrespect the star at midfield?
I don't think so.
Really?
I think it's going to be – I think the most interesting thing is going to be him going against guys that he's gone against in practice, that he's practiced against every day, that have been his teammates. I think it's going to be chippy. I think he's going to be out of his mind, but I don't think he'll do anything like that. He was just seeing with Jerry like 2 weeks ago.
I know, and he went to the Beyonce concert with him and all that, and I totally understand that. However, I just feel like, you know, Dez, and I don't know Dez, you know him, I do not, but I feel like he has just the right amount of petty to where he might do something like that. I know it was done last week, the Titans did it, but it just feels like, it's just kind of like, well, you guys didn't re-sign me, you stink, you need a wide receiver, number one, even though Amari Cooper did look good last week, I'm just going to go and do something like that. But maybe that's just because I'm hoping that for entertainment, because it would be funny to watch.
Yeah, you never know with Dez, though. Never know.
Yeah, he's and like I said, just the fact that he's getting to play for a team like the Saints now, it is that vindication for him. And everybody on the Saints can score. So, I mean, they're, I think, one of the top scoring offenses in the country no matter what. So that's exciting for him. And, what the hell is going on with the Cowboys, Johnny? What is going on at this point?
You haven't seen the same dominant force up front the way the Cowboys have been over the past couple of years. They're missing a couple of pieces on the O-line. And they haven't been as good defensively. And I think because they haven't been as good up front and haven't been able to run the ball, Dak hasn't been able to be as effective. And I really think that's exactly what's wrong.
I am not a big fan of Jason Garrett, and that's just because I think that he had the one good season and Jerry's holding on to him. But we talked about this too, and you having bye weeks, you having off seasons, you know, right now you're in the middle of an off season before you go back to the CFL, so you can do whatever you want. Talking about Jason Garrett being at the World Series game a couple weeks ago during the bye week, sitting with Brad Paisley, you've had your fair share of cameras catching you on front rows of different professional games. Was that a big deal at all that he was there?
I would say no, but then every time I've done something like that, I've been completely wrong. So I don't really know how to answer that question.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the Giants on the boat, you know, the whole Miami thing, like that always comes up. Tony Romo going to Mexico with Jessica Simpson before the playoffs, that always comes up. And when the Jason Garrett thing happened, it was like, come on, man, like that's just not a good look. But at the same time, nobody can expect professional athletes and coaches to not be doing stuff on their bye weeks. Like that's a ridiculous thing to think. It's just like, well, shit, when a national camera catches you, it is a bad look if you lose afterwards.
When Belichick does it, let me know.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point. And if he did do it, which he wouldn't, but if he did do it, they're still going to win anyway, so it's kind of like forgiven. It's like if Nick Saban comes out and says something and he looks like a jackass, it's okay because they win. Belichick's the same way.
I agree.
All right. Well, you got anything else? I know you're big moves in L.A. right now, going to play some Fortnite for a couple hours a day. You got anything else you want to say while EB's not on the podcast?
I'm going to sit on my ass for the next, like, 2 or 3 hours and just play video games. Let's just enjoy the first day of the off season.
Enjoy the first
right.
day. Yeah, and the weather is probably amazing in L.A. Very jealous of that. So you.
I just went from 30 degrees to 75 and sunny.
Ugh. It's so gross in New York right now. And it's just like, I mean, you know, being from Texas, like, I don't care how long you're in the cold, you never get used to the cold.
Hey, Casey, let me give you some advice.
Uh-oh.
Layers.
Layers.
Layers. The key to the North.
Just keep layering. Like, I'll walk around like the kid in, A Christmas Story, where he can't even put his arms down.
6 or 7 long-sleeve T-shirts stacked on top of each other, a couple big jackets, you're good.
And I'll look thick as hell if I put on all those layers, so maybe it's a win-win situation for me.
There you go. Gain.
All right, enjoy your first couple days of the off season. Enjoy college football, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you guys next week.
I've been moving calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful is a struggle for me. Don't pull up at 6 a.m. to cuddle with me. You know how I like it when you loving on me. I don't wanna die for them to miss me. Yes, I see the things that they wishing on me. Hope I got some brothers that outlive me. They gon' tell the story.